भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय For the month of Damodar, we've already begun, because this is day number two. The pastime of Mother Jasoda binding Krishna. We've heard the first two verses, they're joined together. There's a feedback on the sound. Something that was a little bit mysterious, worth repeating, is Krishna, one of the important reasons for the Damodar Leela was Krishna was not satisfied that he had been properly scolded. Now, most children don't want to be scolded. But Krishna does. And the scolding is a particular kind of affection. It's not harsh kind of scolding. It's an affectionate kind of scolding. It's part of the variety of love of Vatsalya Rasa. Now there's perversions of everything, including scolding. But from chapter 8, we heard two examples where Krishna wanted to be scolded. And that was his butter stealing. And what did Mother Jasoda do? She embraced him. So what did Krishna do? He ate dirt. And she admonished him somewhat. Let me see. Open your mouth. But according to Sanatan Goswami, the rasa of feeling happiness by Mother Jasoda's controlling him with her love was incomplete. And so he did something sufficient to have her scold him and control him in a way that didn't happen with the other two events. That's Sanatan Goswami's explanation, a principle feature. Now, turn it around the other way, and it's what's so special about this pastime that we, not only ISKCON, but all over amongst Vaishnavas, many, many Vaishnavas honor this whole month because of this Leela. What's special about this Leela? One of the things that's special about the Leela is Krishna is Bhaktavatsala. He likes. One of his outstanding qualities, if not the outstanding quality. And it seems contradictory to his Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Name Dvesho Stina Priyaha nature. He's equal to everyone. But he's especially inclined to his devotee, which doesn't sound equal to everybody. He's got his favorites. Anyway, that's a nice topic. It's such a nice topic that in relation to chapter 38, which we were discussing before the month of Damodar began, there's an important verse that it took us 4 days of discussing the commentary to go deeply into that subject. because it's such an important feature of Krishna. The nature of Krishna being the harmonizer of all contradictions. And one of those contradictions is equalness and is partiality. Because in material sense, partiality is a fault. Friends and enemies. It's like, that's a no-no. It's part of material consciousness. But Krishna doesn't have friends, enemies. Everyone is his friend. And even when, well, everyone is his friend, to some of his friends, he's partial. We're going to hear a little bit of that this evening, a little bit. No, actually, I deleted it. I deleted it. There's a discussion in Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu explaining the nature of bhakti being uttama bhakti. You know, the anya vilasha dushunyam gyana karma adhyanavratam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhaktir uttama. So at length, he gives the verse. It's actually Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur giving commentary of anukul. And it gets a little technical that, you know, there's the fault of redundancy, but there's no redundancy. Or anyway, it's a little bit technical. But when Krishna kills demons, they may get the same result destination wise as the devotee. And that's perplexing to some. Because how can someone who's a demon, and it certainly is not adequate, it's not favorable, so how can they get a destination that's like that of a devotee? How does that work? So, in some cases, we'll get to the verses for this morning, for this evening, but Madhvacharya and some say the chapters with Agasura being killed and getting liberation, and then Brahma Vimohan Leela and all of what he saw and what he says, some acharyas, some disciplic successions say it's interpolated, and they have their logic, and Jiva Goswami refused their logic. You know, but one of the logics is, how can a demon get liberation? And one of his refutations that how can a demon get liberation is a verse from Second Canto, Chapter 7, the list of avatars. Canto 1, Chapter 3 has a list. Canto 2, Chapter 7 has a list. When it speaks of Krishna, it's a whole long list. Of this demon, that demon, the other demon, like, you know, 27 demons got liberation, killed by Krishna. So it's not an interpolation about Agasura. Anyway, one of the groups of people that don't like it is Madhva. Because Madhva is Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. How can Brahma become Vimohan? So it's interpolated. Some, at least some of Madhva's followers. I don't know if Madhva himself. Anyway, the special feature of Krishna wanting to be controlled by his devotee. So he's the supreme controller, Ishvara Parama, Krishna. There's controllers, and there's a controller of all controllers who's not controlled by anyone. That's Krishna, Ishvara Parama, Krishna. And he's controlled by Mother Yashoda. What? No, Yes. So it's a very, the beginning of the chapter is Shukadeva Goswami saying, what you've asked is a very confidential subject matter, and it's the duty of the spiritual master to explain confidential subject matters to someone like you, who's very eager and sincere, wants to understand. But most people can't understand, so please listen very carefully, because it's not easy to understand. So what to speak of us? Shukadeva Goswami speaking, we're not Maharaj Parikshit, but eagerness to hear it will help us to understand. So the pastime begins with, it's a glorification of Mother Jasoda. Just a little background, just to embellish this a little bit further. The background is, along with Krishna wanting to be scolded, it's a glorification of Mother Jasoda, because chapter 8 is entitled The Childhood Pastimes of Krishna. The childhood pastimes of Krishna are especially meant for those in parental affection. The spotlight goes upon the elder gopis and Mother Jasoda. I mean, incidental are the husbands of the gopis and Nanda Maharaj, but the spotlight is the ladies and their parental affection, Vatsalya Rasa, towards Krishna. And going through all of this after the naughtiness of Krishna in stealing butter and so forth and so on, comes Krishna showing the universe within his mouth, and all of what she saw and how she responded. And then the statement is made by Shukadeva Goswami, how elevated is the love of Mother Jasoda? And then after he says it, Maharaj Parikshit says, how many lifetimes of austerities, what did she do to attain that position? And of course, you can't attain the position. But he doesn't say that. He goes into this explanation of Drona and Dara. And Drona and Dara, it turns out, they are expansions of the original Yasoda and Nanda in Krishna Loka. There's a partial expansion of them in the realm of the Vasus, amongst the demigods. And then the explanation is, they underwent austerities, long extended austerities. Brahma came, yes, what would you like? We'd like to have the Supreme Lord as our son. Very, very good. He smiled. Just now Krishna is going to appear. So you appear on earth and he can become your son. So it sounds like Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj as opposed that was achieved by Drona and Dara, but they're not opposed. So recognizing, Shukadeva Goswami recognizes that Maharaj Parikshit wasn't so satisfied with that answer. The Drona and Dara, what happens is they enter into the bodies of the eternal associates, Nanda and Jasoda. When the pastimes are over, Krishna sends them back to the heavenly realm. And the eternal Nanda Jasoda return to the spiritual world or enter into their Aprakat Lila. So it's a meditation on this text 3, which I'm going to read again. This is the third class in a row. The beautiful description of the scene. And the focus goes to Mother Jasoda. Dressed in a saffron yellow sari, with a belt tied about her full hips, Mother Jasoda pulled on the churning rope, laboring considerably, her bangles and earrings moving and vibrating, and her whole body shaking. Because of her intense love for her child, her breasts were wet with milk. Her face, with its very beautiful eyebrows, was wet with perspiration, and Malati flowers were falling from her hair. You've probably seen paintings because it's an inspiring depiction in words, and words create a picture, and artists create a picture of the words. Here's Jiva Goswami. We read some of the other commentaries. This is Jiva Goswami commenting. Describing Yashoda, because of a manifestation of affection for her as a mother, having unalloyed affection for Krishna, Shukadev shows her qualification by her beauty and her affection. The description of her eyebrows and hips indicate as well the beautiful features of all her other limbs, though they are not mentioned. The beauty of her dress is indicated by her cloth and belt. Kshauma means cloth made. This had a thin appearance and was of various colors, including shades of yellow. According to Krama Deepika, her complexion is blackish, but yellow according to Gotamiya Tantra. The cloth was tied with a cord, having great beauty. Or the cord was used to tie her petticoat while she churned the yogurt. The beauty of her natural movements is described. She pulled the ropes, and her earrings swayed. Her hair was tied up with jasmine flowers, which grow profusely during Kartik month. Her affection is described. Milk dripped from her breasts out of affection for her son. Her breasts moved because of her singing about Krishna's pastimes. Joy was expressed by the movements of her eyebrows. That's just a darshan of Mother Yashoda. And the other commentaries say if one comes to the stage of spiritual perfection, and in that stage of, you know, say Brahma Bhuta at least, and there's no longer material attraction, only spiritual attraction, and if one has a natural affinity for parental love, meditating on these features of Mother Yashoda becomes a natural ecstasy. It's a Saraguna Bhakti. So, Sanatana Goswami writes, having shown her skill in singing as a qualification for being the Lord's mother, her beauty and her dress at that time are described. She wore yellow silk. According to scriptures, she had a dark complexion, and thus the combination with yellow was spectacular. The belt tied on her waist enhanced her beauty. To churn the yogurt, she had tightly tied her belt. Her breasts flowed with milk out of affection for her son. This affection arose naturally, or because she had been singing about her son. The movement of her brows increased her beauty. Her earrings also swayed. Jasmine fell from her hair. The verse depicts her manifestation of affection. So now next is, we're going to read two more verses. That was the conclusion of three. Then we're going to cover four and five. There's not long commentary. translation of text 4. While Mother Yashoda was churning butter, Lord Krishna, desiring the milk of her breast, appeared before her. And in order to increase her transcendental pleasure, he caught hold of the churning rod and began to prevent her from churning. Purport. This is Srila Prabhupada's purport. Krishna was sleeping within the room. It's early in the morning. He was still napping. She was getting ready for the Diwali festival that evening. That was the day this pastime took place. Krishna was sleeping within the room, and as soon as he got up, he became hungry and went to his mother. Wanting to stop her from churning and drink the milk of her breast, he stopped her from moving the churning rod. She just reached out and you've probably heard this, it's called in European philosophy, the stone paradox. You heard that one? It's a classic argument and of atheists, atheistic philosophers. And the question is, can God create an object or a stone so heavy that he cannot lift it? Have you heard that one? Some of you have. So it's a trick question. It's a paradox question. Because you say, yes, he can create a stone so heavy he can't lift it, then there's something he can't do, he can't lift it. Or, no, he can't create something so heavy he can't lift it. There's something he can't do, so he's not all-powerful. It's a trick question. I was told that Prabhupada's answer to that question was, yes, he can create something so heavy he can't lift it, then lift it. But it's one of those contradictory things. So an example that's given by our acharyas is, this is a more modern European philosopher's paradox. It's got a name. I haven't looked it up, but probably you can look it up, the stone paradox. But when Krishna was a small boy, this is in chapter 8, one of his childhood pastimes is, the gopis would sometimes ask Krishna to go somewhere, pick something up and bring it. But you've probably seen that beautiful painting of Krishna's holding the shoes of Nanda Maharaj. Mother Jashoda said, and he brings the shoes to Nanda. He's toddling along. And, you know, Nanda Maharaj just embraces his son. It's a loving affection. But sometimes they would ask Krishna to pick up something that he couldn't pick up because it was too heavy. So he would go and smile and look at them and just touch it. Too heavy to pick up. And then he lifted Govardhan Hill. It's loving exchange. Whatever Krishna was doing with his devotees. I mean, it's so nice. And, you know, people that are atheists, they go, oh, you people are silly. But, you know, the silly devotees appreciate the sweetness of Krishna. And he's just delighting his devotees. So she was delighted. He's all powerful. He could do anything. But he just touched the churning rod. And she knew what it meant. She was so pleased at how clever he was just by doing that to say, you know, don't do that. I'm hungry. He woke up crying. And mothers know what, I don't know how mothers know, but mothers know which cry means what. Maybe it's usually it's hungry or something, but anyway. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, waking up in the morning, leaving the room, Krishna began crying from hunger. He thus approached Yashoda and held the churning rod, indicating to her that she should stop churning and give him attention. Yashoda understood his cleverness, and this increased her bliss. Jiva Goswami writes, hungry, according to his infant pastimes, filled with affection for his mother, he desired her milk. He approached Yashoda, filled with affection for him, since she was his mother. Shukadeva describes Krishna's inner emotion. By this she attained complete Vahan, that's in the Sanskrit of the verse, complete happiness because of his attempt to drink her milk. And because of his ability to stop her churning, and because of his cleverness by grabbing the rod. He was most attractive at this time, Adi. It should be understood that he had just risen from bed, since the churning was done during early morning in Kartik month, and he had not yet met his friends. I mean, he's at the age, something like a toddler, because later when the pastime she binds him, he's with his friends. And they, because his friends saw him knock over the twin Arjun trees and tell the adults, we saw, this is what happened. So he wasn't with his friends yet. He just got out of bed. Text 5. Mother Yashoda then embraced Krishna, allowing him to sit down on her lap. And she began to look upon the face of the Lord with great love and affection. Because of her intense affection, milk was flowing from her breast. But when she saw that the milk pan on the oven was boiling over, she immediately left her son to take care of the overflowing milk, although the child was not yet fully satisfied with drinking the milk of his mother's breast. So, there's some argument. She's a pure devotee, and she only wants what Krishna wants, and Krishna wasn't satisfied, so how could she leave him unsatisfied? Sometimes that question is raised. Purport, Srila Prabhupada. Everything in the household affairs of Mother Yashoda was meant for Krishna. Although Krishna was drinking the breast milk of Mother Yashoda, when she saw that the milk pan in the kitchen was overflowing, she had to take care of it immediately. And thus she left her son, who then became very angry, not having been fully satisfied with drinking the milk of her breast. Sometimes one must take care of more than one item of important business for the same purpose. Sound familiar? Therefore, Mother Yashoda was not unjust when she left her son to take care of the overflowing milk. On the platform of love and affection, it is the duty of the devotee to do one thing first and then other things later. The proper intuition by which to do this is given by Krishna. So hint, she was following the dictations of Krishna. But it was a lila where he became angry. So then, wait a minute. How can God get angry? Because spiritual people aren't supposed to get angry, right? What to speak of God, so how can God be angry? But it's a transcendental anger. Oh, come on, you people. You just put the word transcendental in front of everything. You whitewash it. It's Leela. How clever. But it is. She did what she did because he inspired her to do what she did. He was doing the whole thing so that he would get scolded. There's a, as the beginning parts of this chapter indicates, there's a mystery to all of this. There's a mystery. Same thing that's said with the chapter 13, when the cowherd boys go back after the killing of a Gasura demon, saying that it took place the same day, when it was 1 year later that they went back and reported to the people of Braja. That is, this big serpent was lying out there somewhere in Braja. Now, that says it was a little bit distant, but in any case, for a whole year, nobody knew about it. The skin had become dried. And the cowherd boys would later then go there and play there, like it was like a playground or something. Because everything for them was a playground. But so it was a mystery. How did this happen? They said it, you know what happened today? But it was 1 year later. There's a lot of mystery in Krishna's pastimes. And again, Shukadeva Goswami says, it's not easy to understand. You have to listen carefully. I'll explain. Prabhupada here refers to, so the proper intuition by which to do one thing first and the next thing later, and which is the priority. The proper intuition is given by Krishna. And he refers to 10:10 Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami bodhi yogam kam vinamam upiyanti te. In Krishna consciousness, everything is dynamic. Krishna guides the devotee and what to do first, and what to do next, on the platform of the Absolute Truth. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, Mother Jasoda is thinking, oh, how intelligent this child is. Saying this, she stopped churning and put the boy on her lap, and then gave him milk. Then she got up and quickly left. Why? Because the milk on the stove was boiling over. Question. But how could Yashoda show so much concern for the milk boiling over that she would leave Krishna unsatisfied and hungry? Answer. She had such concern for what Krishna would eat and drink that she could temporarily ignore Krishna. Only those in the sway of prema can understand or talk about such remarkable actions in prema. It is difficult for others to understand. Jiva Goswami writes, her smile spread over her cheeks. She smiled because of the milk flowing spontaneously and because of his sweetness. She looked at his face, but then put him down, though he was not yet fully satisfied. Oh, why did she not go while feeding him and holding him? She was going quickly. If she held on, she could not go quickly. The milk was boiling over. It should be understood that the kitchen was not far away, within sight. The milk, like the yogurt, was special. She had left him for only a moment. And then Jiva Goswami refers to a verse spoken by Brahma in his prayers, chapter 14. These devotees of Vrindavan have dedicated their homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts to you. How much more, then, had Yasoda given everything to Krishna? So she was neglecting him. It's part of him and her everything, giving everything to Krishna. Last paragraph for this evening. Not tolerating any suffering of their son, the mother and father work constantly for his future health, wealth, and knowledge. They feed him medicine, bathe him, and punish him. The height of affection that a mother and father have for their son is difficult to find in other types of love. It does not exist elsewhere. She was thus intensely attached to the wealth of milk of the cowherds. Quote, this child does not know how to protect his wealth. Therefore, I must protect it now. Thinking thus, she put him down. But her going was for his sake also, filled with affection for him. Though one tolerates suffering to protect one's wealth, there must be strong affection to do so. Similarly, motivated by strong affection for Krishna, she tried to protect the milk. That's the end for this evening. Earlier it said, well, there's different versions too, but in this commentary it said, there are 7 or 8 out of Nanda Maharaja's 9 lakhs of cows that she knew were very special. And she knew, she's a connoisseur, a very refined taste. She knew this kind of grass with this kind of cow mixed together makes this kind of flavor. So she personally had arranged the grass, had fed the cows, had milked the cows. She was boiling some milk on the stove and was churning some of the yogurt. It was all for Krishna. It was all for Krishna. There's nothing else but for Krishna, for her. And so she was valuing, you know, that those particular milk that was on the stove because of its flavor and everything that went into. But, you know, not out of the material attachment. There's this saying, don't cry over spilt milk. Have you heard that one? You heard that one? Now you have. You ever spill milk? Sometimes. Don't cry over spilt milk. It's valuable. So, but her, the valuable thing for her is not just the milk, but the service to Krishna and the role that that milk has for service to Krishna. So it may look that very elevated devotees have attachment, material attachment, but they don't have material attachment. They have only spiritual attachment. And the spiritual attachment may, like when the demons in Braja, it's going to be in Gokul, were taking place, Putana, Trinavarta, Shakatasura. The elders had a elder conference. And Upananda was the main person to saying, we should leave Gokula because there's too much disturbance. We should go to a place where there's more protection. And on the other side, there's better grazing ground for the cows. And we're under the protection of the king. Of course, King Kamsa is not about to protect too many people. But, you know, their thought was the safety and well-being of the children, and particularly Krishna and Balaram. although they didn't need anybody's protection, but they were feeling like that. That's parental affection. It's natural parental affection, even, you know, aside from the residents of Vrindavan. Protection of parents toward children is perfectly natural. There'd be something wrong if they didn't feel that sense of protection. But there's spiritual protection and spiritual, the word that's used by our acharyas in relation to the Brijvasis is possessiveness. But it's not the material kind. Mamata. It's not ahankara. It's mamata. You know, Krishna is dependent upon our protection. So it's just their particular kind of affection. Their particular kind of affection. It just, and it knows no boundaries. And it's so strong that when Krishna shows his ability to protect himself, they see something else. Narayan protected him. Nanda Maharaj did so many pious activities as a result. Krishna's being protected or something like that. They can't see his divinity. They can see his sweetness. And they want to do everything for him. There's some, it's not in these commentaries, but I've read elsewhere, when Mother Jasoda saw the milk boiling over, the milk was thinking, oh, what is the use for me? Krishna will be so satisfied with taking the milk from the breast of Mother Jasoda. What is the use for me? Let me just give up my life. So we started to jump into the fire. And then when Mother Jasoda came to rescue the milk that was on the stove, oh, I'm putting Mother Jasoda through some difficulty. Let me not put her through some difficulty. And she's so expert, she knew exactly, maybe, I've been in a situation because I don't have much familiarity with kitchen stuff, but all she did was just sprinkle a few drops of water on the surface of the pot and the boiling over stopped. So if you're ever in a situation where you're panicking because something is boiling over, remember Mother Jasoda. Just sprinkle a few drops on the top and then you can handle it, you know, do with it. But if you just panic, it's just going to keep boiling over. And you'll burn your hands or whatever else you're going to burn and lose whatever's in the pot. She's very expert. Very, very expert. And the intelligence comes from Krishna. Then another, it's a detail, but she was using her rational faculties. Now, Krishna gave her the reasonableness. I can come back and continue feeding Krishna, but if I leave the milk, it's going to boil over, and that's a problem. So I'll deal with, it's just irrational. I'll deal with the milk that's boiling over, and then I'll come back. It wasn't like abandoning. It was just first things first. Very, very reasonable for the service of Krishna. That's how we use our rational faculty. That's how to properly use, so that Krishna is pleased. And that's Mother Jasoda, through and through. And one last thing, then I'll stop. From the previous chapter, commentary says, this little section through verse 20 is focused specifically on Mother Jasoda and her love. And then there are two remaining verses, 21, 22. It says Shukadeva Goswami goes ecstatic and says it again, something that he said in the previous chapter. How fortunate is Mother Jasoda? So she's getting a lot of praise, worthy praise, by Shukadeva Goswami, and he's not, you know, he's not in parental affection, but he's appreciating how much, how intense, how complete is her love. Now, there are other times when he speaks like that about the cowherd boys. Obviously, there's other times where he speaks like that about the gopis, the young gopis. So in different rasas, the exaltedness of the resident of Vrindavan is a joy for Shukadeva Goswami to narrate. And it's a joy for someone who hears to hear it narrated. What you doing? Yeah. Oh, making chapatis, huh? Okay. Meditating on Mother DeSoto making chapatis. Okay, let's see if there's some discussion. Yeah. There's the microphone. And remove the mask so others can hear you better.
I have a question about the dirt story.
Which one?
The dirt story.
The dirt story.
Yeah. So if Krishna wanted to be scolded, then why did he show like his universe when he opened his mouth and go against Balaram?
Well, he wanted to do, there is not only one thing, he had multiple things. One of the multiple things is from time to time, Krishna would show his opulence to his beloved devotees. And what that, when he showed his opulence to his beloved devotees in Vrindavan, it was done in such a way that their affection for him would increase. That was the purpose. One of the purposes that he showed the universe within his mouth.
More than the scolding thing?
Well, she had already scolded him. If you eat dirt, I haven't eaten dirt, they lied. You can look inside my mouth. Open your mouth. So that scolding was already complete.
Thank you.
Mission accomplished. We're going to pass the microphone so in case there's somebody remotely.
Because in the remotely they can hear your question.
Maharaj, you were saying in the beginning that the demons had the same fate as the devotees.
Some demons achieve the same destination.
Yes.
As the devotees, and that's puzzling, isn't it?
Yes. So is there any explanation?
Yes. Commonly, say three ways, reverse. Rarely they will achieve sa rupya mukti. More commonly they'll achieve sayuja mukti. But even sayuja mukti, that's very, very rare to achieve. But demons may achieve it. Those killed by Krishna achieve it. And if they achieve sarupya, it's because they've done even the modest, slightest amount of service. That's what our acharyas say. So it's a little bit of a puzzle, like what kind of, because they're mean and they want to kill Krishna and they're doing detrimental things for the Vrijvasis too. So where's the service in all of that? It's the slightest little service, like Putana or Agasura. So the slight amount of service, that Agasura did, it's not like, you know, shouted at the rooftops like we hear often about Putana. She came as a mother, and she came dressed as a mother, as a, you know, a mother. So much so, she was so beautiful and so decked out and so forth. No one even thought to stop her. the commentators say, maybe they were thinking, maybe she's the goddess of fortune. But she came with an ill intent. But she came as a mother. And so Krishna, so as with Putana, Agasura, he could have, you know, chomped on the cowherd boys and calves. But when they entered his mouth, they didn't. He didn't. And the act, although it wasn't like, you know, really lets me please Krishna for a moment thinking like that, but the cowherd boys were feeling separation from Krishna. And that was that moment where Krishna became overwhelmed by his own yogamaya potency, wondering, oh no, they've entered the mouth. You know that little section?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of commentary on that because the personality Godhead, he doesn't need to do anything. He has such a sankalpa shakti. He just desires and voila, it happens. But he desired and it didn't happen. He desired they wouldn't enter the mouth of the serpent. And they did. And he became bewildered too. His satya sankalpa shakti was checked. And he became, he's omniscient, became bewildered. So what's going on? And he was enjoying. It was his own yogamaya potency that permitted all of that. Lila shakti is our acharyas use, yogamaya. And then the next moment he knew what to do. So the opportunity, the little service was the opportunity for the cowherd boys to be reunited with Krishna. It was a service to the cowherd boys. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like intentional. Let me do something nice for the cowherd boys. But it was a little service. He got forearm formed by Kunta.
So one last question, Maharaj. Is it possible to go back in one lifetime? Or it takes multiple lifetimes.
What do you think?
I don't know, Maharaj.
Well, was Srila Prabhupada just exaggerating, or did he mean what he said?
I think he meant okay. What he said.
And so the potency is there. How long it will take is another question, but the potency is there within the bhakti process in one lifetime. It's not exaggeration or something like that.
Guru Maharaj, once Pankajangri Prabhu told how to offer to the deities, like we're offering to the spiritual master and through the disciplic succession, and then finally Radharani is cooking and Mother Yashoda offering to Krishna. Is it okay to remember this love and absorption of Mother Yashoda's love for Krishna when we offer?
Why not? I mean, one of the messages we spent discussing at length yesterday evening was not to imitate, but remembrance, and remembrance of any kind, and with Krishna at the center, remembrance of any kind. She's got another one. Could we do this with something that... Starting tomorrow, we're going to do wiping down the microphone with a sterile wrap, sterilizing wrap, because just on the safety side. Go ahead.
My question is a follow-up question for
You better turn
question.
The volume back up again. She's got a soft voice. Go ahead.
So it's a follow-up question from Prabhu's question. So if demons go back to Godhead, if Krishna kills them, then why not be a demon?
Then why not be a demon?
Yeah, the goal to be a demon and get killed by Krishna.
Well, three things. Because Rupa Goswami has taught us that bhakti is anukulyena Krishna anushila, doing that which is pleasing and favorable to Krishna. So being a demon isn't pleasing and favorable to Krishna. If they somehow manage to do even a slight favorable service, that entitles their eligibility. But being killed by other forms of the Lord other than Krishna, they don't get liberation.
So if like Ram or Balaram kills them, the
understanding is, if that can be achieved by even demons, then what to speak of the devotees? So be a devotee. Don't look for a back door. Go through the front door.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, go ahead. Make noise.
Maharaj, why do we have to chant?
Why do you have to?
Chant.
Chant? You don't have to. Who said you have to? You have to breathe. But we chant not because we have to, we chant because it's beneficial for us. Do you brush your teeth in the morning? Not always. Honest. Do you brush your teeth in the morning? That was a yes. Yes? You're getting shy, or what's going on here? Okay. Yeah, okay. So, you brush your teeth in the morning. Why? Why do you brush your teeth every morning? Because it's good for you. You don't have to, but you do because it's good for you. And it becomes something you do every day, at least once or more than once after meals, because it's good for you. It's oral hygiene. And then there's heart hygiene. It makes the heart clean. So we chant because it makes the heart clean. We don't have to. You can have a dirty heart. Lots of people have one of those. But we want our heart to become clean. And so we chant because it's beneficial for us. And that's a starting point. There's more and more and more and more, but that's a good starting point. Cheto darpana marjanam. You know that one? Cheto darpana marjanam. Lord Chaitanya taught that chanting makes the heart clean. That's why. And there's more that happens beyond that, but that's a good start. Make the heart clean. Take a bath, brush your teeth, and make the heart, make the outside, and then make the inside clean. It's good.
Guru Maharaj, my question is, like Mother Yashoda has to choose to take care of the milk instead of Krishna at that moment. So I feel I run into those, as
all
you said.
All the time. We all do.
So what was her success?
She was thinking that for Krishna's pleasure, that was her success. Even if she had chosen the other.
Mm.
But she chose, inspired by Krishna, to choose. And it was very reasonable, quite rational. But the success wasn't just the milk didn't boil over on the stove. The success was her meditation was pleasing Krishna. And if there's a course correction needed, Krishna can do that because one is submissive to what Krishna wants because that's my meditation, which was favorable, pleasing to Krishna. We go by the verse that Prabhupada referred to in the purport, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Dadami Bodhi Yogamtam. Krishna gives Bodhi to those who are constantly engaged in trying to please him. We make mistakes. Hearing a series of lectures where Prabhupada, every lecture was saying, everybody makes mistakes. Listing the names of, you know, people that made mistakes. Great people made mistakes. Great people make mistakes. What to speak of little people. But when we're making choices, we're going to make mistakes. So the success is not, you never make a wrong mistake because that's not going to happen. You never make a wrong choice. Going to happen, but the intention is, and then the course correction comes from Super Soul, and circumstances tell us, wow, that was a mistake.
So Maharaj, like if meditation is always on Krishna, then why would somebody make a mistake? Like I always question myself on that.
Well, there's a transcendental mistake, like Maharaj Pariksit putting the snake around the sage. Mm-hmm. It's inspired by Krishna for a reason. Arjuna becoming bewildered about his duty, there for a reason. Bharat Maharaj becoming attracted to the deer and stopping his practice,